This episode is brought to you by the SolarWinds APM Suite. Simplify your full-stack monitoring for hybrid, Azure, AWS, and other cloud-native IT environments, and gain valuable performance insights across user experience, applications, services, and infrastructure. Visit solarwinds.com/APM Suite.
The SolarWinds Cloud Confessions 2020 survey explores how extensively technology professionals are using APM tools, whether on-premises or for SaaS-based application management, and how they monitor these environments. It also showcases areas where tech pros feel confident in their APM tools and strategies, and challenges and avenues for building confidence. I'm Leon Adato, and joining me today on SolarWinds Tech Pod is Adam Bertram, aka Adam the Automator. In our last conversation, Adam and I dug deep into the implications of the report that it had regarding APM. But there was so much more for us to discuss. We're back for a whole other episode. Adam, thank you for joining us again.
Hey, Leon, glad to be back again.
Okay, so some people know you from your website or your podcast or the other work that you do, but for those folks in the listening audience who are hearing you for the first time, can you take a moment for some shameless self-promotion? Tell us a little bit about yourself and where they can find more of your work.
Sure. I am Adam Bertram, as you said, also known as Adam the Automator, since I'm a big fan of automation. You can find me at my blog. I blog a lot and I have a lot of guest authors on adamtheautomator.com. And you can also find me on the Twitters at adbertram.
Great. And just to round things out, again, my name is Leon Adato. I'm a head geek at SolarWinds, and that actually is my job title, greatest job on earth. You can find me on the Twitters, as the youngins say, at Leon Adato. You can also find me on the SolarWinds user community called thwack.com. My username there is Adato L-E. And I want to start off with a quote from the survey that gets to the heart of, I think, the self-image and self-perception of IT practitioners. It says, IT pros are, quote, confident in their ability to manage and monitor applications on-prem, in hybrid environments, and in the cloud. This confidence mostly sits with their ability to troubleshoot. And the other quote, troubleshooting and monitoring as the top two areas where tech pros have the most confidence is consistent with last year's findings. In 2019, troubleshooting application issues was the number one activity tech pros spent their time on, with 48% of respondents choosing this as the top three tasks. So obviously, you get good at the stuff you do a lot, even if you hate doing it, which was clear from the 2019 survey that it was one of the top three tasks and they wish they could stop doing it. But it also speaks to the maturity of monitoring not being a continuum, but actually a set of interlocking abilities where if you're strong in one area, you compensate for a weakness in another. IT is used to troubleshooting. But I want to talk about what this says to you. I mean, this was a survey about APM, and yet troubleshooting comes to the top about this is how we use our APM and this is what we do. I think there's something about that that speaks to the heart of IT pros. What was your take on that?
Yeah, I definitely think so, too. You hit a good point to where you think, you know, you say you people get good at even if they don't like to do what they're doing. And I think that's how IT is with troubleshooting. I mean, essentially, it's what they know. You know, they know how to fix stuff, but it's hard to really get in that mindset of proactive engagement. You know, proactive things because going back, I'd like to go back to some of the stories that I've had in my career. You know, there was a position that I was at where the management was concerned. They kind of didn't see the forest for the trees. They were concerned about closed tickets. They measured success of each individual, not only on the support side, they did the majority on the support side, but also on the engineering side to where they were measuring customer success. They defined customer success as number of tickets closed, how long
right.
people spend on tickets, how fast will they address these things. And that set the incentive of, that set the incentive of, well, then all I have to do is close tickets. And, us being, brilliant people and brilliant IT people, engineers, we said, okay, well, let's just going to game the system and try to automate
I was gonna
this.
Say, years of playing Halo and Quake and Doom teach you how to game systems really fast.
Exactly. Well, if my bonus is getting measured on, how many tickets I close, well, watch out. I'm going to close a lot of tickets. Well,
right.
Obviously that doesn't necessarily mean anything because, you could be closing 50 tickets and not really help anyone. But at the end of the day, they realize that, you know, a closed ticket is a success. It's a win. Not only that, if they do actually help somebody, I close a ticket, that's a win versus a, you know, kind of a long form project.
Right. I love the fact that some ticket systems have a mass close button. And I keep on thinking that is the worst idea ever to put into a system is close 37,000 tickets all at once. Don't let them do that. If you have 37,000 tickets, you have a different problem to solve. Yep. But okay. All right. You're like, but you're absolutely right. It's you're going to get what you measure, and you better make sure that you're measuring what you really want.
Yep. They were just fixing the symptom rather than the core sickness, disease, I guess, if you want to
right.
call that.
I think it also speaks to an attitude where IT is still a cost center. And so like, what do? Well, I close tickets because that doesn't provide value. But we didn't expect you to provide value. And you had a comment as we were preparing for this conversation about how DevOps is really changing that attitude a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is. You know, just, you know, years and years ago when I first started out, you know, you think of ops, or, you know, IT was it called, or now some people just call it IT ops. It's a cost center. It keeps the lights on. You know, I think that ingrained nature of I just don't want this server to go down. I don't care what happens on it. I just want to make sure that the lights stay on. I want to make sure that it's still available through, you know, my monitoring. So I want to see all green. You know, that's a big thing. I want to see all green on my dashboard. That's a more of a, you know, a cost center thinking mentality. But like you said, that we were talking about earlier was, you know, with DevOps, that's really one tenet of DevOps, or the kind of a culture perspective is really turning IT from a cost center to a value add for the business, rather than figuring out whether then, oh, it's just IT, we're going to stick them down in a basement. They're just costing us money. Now, if you combine dev and ops together, we software developers, maybe you're an e-commerce company, maybe you are developing applications for your customers. At that point, if dev and ops can work together and build a single product, at that point, IT and dev are not completely separate. They provide, you know, value. We're actually making money off of the products and the services that IT provides.
Right. It takes your mentality from I'm good at what I do after it's broken. Like, that's where my strength is, or maybe shortly before it breaks, but that's where I'm good, to I'm good at making things better. I'm good at proactively thinking about an existing system and where can I improve this to make someone's life easier, better, to make a process move more smoothly, to remove friction. That's a very different mindset for, I'll say, traditional ops trained IT members. But it's an important place to go because the report really does bear out this whole thing about getting good at troubleshooting. Just to quote again, 78%. Of tech pros report spending less than 10% of their time proactively optimizing their environment versus reactively maintaining it. In 2019, 77% of the respondents reported spending the same amount of time on proactive optimization. And that sentence is kind of hard to follow. What it's saying is that last year and this year, IT pros spent less than 10% of their time improving the environment. They spent most of their time troubleshooting. Again, I think that there is a conversation to be had about how can we as IT practitioners move ourselves into the frame of mind of making things better. How do I get good? How do I build the muscle of looking at the world, my world, through the lens of what can I improve?
Yeah, I think a lot of this goes back to automation, because automation provides you with, you know, I could go on and on about automation, but essentially automation provides you, automates all that stuff, all the boring stuff, the things that you would traditionally spend a lot of time on. I think that should really give people more time to be more proactive. You know, going back to that previous company that I was talking about before, they really didn't have time to be proactive on, you know, a lot of this stuff because they weren't automating more. I think if we can leverage more automation, that can take care of lots and lots of the daily quote unquote traditional ops tasks that were that have been around forever. At that point, if we can give IT more time, they can definitely spend more time being more proactive, keeping closer eye on monitoring tools, on various tools that allow them to see more into understand the various services that they're monitoring.
Yeah, I think that you can start on a very personal level, that we all as IT pros have things that we do repetitively, that we have to, whether it's signing our name to the bottom of an email or filling out a particular set of information over and over again, or creating ticket information, macros is really what I'm getting at, that we can start to think about our world in terms of macros and mini scripts and things. How can I do this thing, that I do over and over again with a couple of keystrokes as opposed to a really long set of commands? Mm-hmm. And if you get into that mindset and you say, wow, this thing used to take me 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever, and now I can do it with a couple of clicks of a button, then you start to use that experience to look at the world around you, to look at the things that happen outside. Again, I have spent 20 years in the monitoring space. And so I look at things like, what is the most populous ticket in the queue? Back to tickets, right? But not because they got closed the most, but what is the ticket, especially the automatic ticket, the one that results from monitoring, what is the one that you see the most of? Because if I see the most of something and I can build a script or a routine or a response that automatically deals with even 20%, 30% of those tickets and causes them never to happen or to automatically reverse themselves. As an example, disk full. If you're in an environment of any kind of moderate size, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 devices, on up to 10,000, 30,000 devices, you're going to get a lot of disk full alerts. They just happen all the time. Disks get full. It's an imperfect world. Screws fall out of doors. That's what happens, as Bender said in that famous movie. But what do you do when you get a disk full? Well, most people, if you're like me, check the temp directory, clear the temp directory, clear old log files. We clear that out. And, 7 out of 10 times, that was the problem. Just too many log files. The disk is fine. Clear it out. Move on. Well, what if you wrote a script that did that? What if you wrote a script that, as a response to the disk full incident, automatically went back to that machine and cleared out the temp files and all that stuff. And then if the problem did not persist, tickets reversed, not closed. Closing tickets is for humans. Closing ticket, to say this problem is gone now requires a human to look at, but it doesn't require a human to look at it at 3 o'clock in the morning. It requires a human to look at it in their time at an appropriate time. So you can reduce. In my experience, I was at a company, we removed 70% of the disk full incidents, the tickets, just by implementing that one script. It resulted in the equivalent of 3/4 of one staff person's time for the year.
I've done the same as well.
Yeah, that's a lot of time, but you have to look at the world in that particular kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think of monitoring as the first stage. That's not the complete life cycle of a problem. The monitoring just will discover the problem. At that point, it's either a human going to do it, or if you define all the patterns like you did, where's the temp directory? The one that I had written was run the disk cleanup utility. If you can define the pattern well enough, you can convert that pattern into a script, and then using the monitoring tool, they can actually discover and remediate at the same time.
Right. And this does not require, knuckles dragging on the ground programming skills, right? You do not have to be God's gift to C# or C++ to be able to do this. Just a little bit of scripting skills, because honestly, it's the commands you would have been running yourself.
Yep, especially with the PowerShell community, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of scripts out there already that will probably do what you needed to do anyway.
Right. Now, those little scripting things lead up to a big word you know, a word that I think is a little bit daunting for some of us who are new to the, you know, cloud and hybrid IT, and that's orchestration. So could you take a minute and talk about orchestration from that standpoint? What is orchestration from the idea of I want to save myself time on repetitive tasks, and I want to have more time to deal with the things that require my big human brain?
Yeah, think of automation and orchestration as automation as the components of an orchestration framework, if you will. So talking generally, think of an automation as that script that you had wrote to clean out temporary files on, you know, one or more servers. That can be really classified as an automation script. You can have, you know, scripts that could be, you know, to create a new Active Directory user. You could have a script to bring up a virtual machine. You can have scripts to do all kinds of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is one thing from the PowerShell arena where I primarily focus on is people will, a team will come up with a lot of these scripts and solve a lot of great problems like this. But at the end of the day, you have to manage all those things, all those scripts. And this is where it kind of comes down into the orchestration space, which is essentially managing all that stuff all as one kind of a unit. So taking this back to an example, so let's say that you have a script to create, I guess onboarding would be a good example of orchestration, because an onboarding process has lots of different steps. You know, you have create an AD user, create a home folder, create a phone, maybe a soft phone account, create it reaches out to all these different services. And you could sort of think of that as if you have a tool that's saying onboard user Joe Smith, click. That is orchestrating all of those, all that automation, all those different scripts to do those individual tasks. So essentially orchestration is considered kind of an umbrella, kind of a platform or a management service in a very general sense of managing all of those automation scripts and all those routines and tasks.
Right. I like the image. So, you know, my father was in the Cleveland Orchestra for 46 years and New York Philharmonic before that. So the idea of an orchestra brings up very visceral memories for me. But the idea of a conductor at the head of that orchestra, 120 people all playing different instruments in different parts. And the conductor, I think a lot of people when they see an orchestra playing think that that guy's just waving his hands. No. He is actually telling each individual player how loud, how soft, how fast, and he's giving very intricate instructions with those subtle hand movements. And I like the idea of an orchestration tool saying to each script, no, not you yet, wait a second. You know, you, more, run again. Okay, good, now you. And the idea that that's what it's doing is each individual part, the script is an instrument, and that the orchestrator is really taking a look at what's happening in that moment. What are the acoustics in the hall? How is this piece playing? How is the soloist working? Whatever, and telling the entire orchestra how to respond to those inputs so that it creates a successful outcome in the end. So, that's just a interesting way. And I like the choice of word that they chose for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dependencies is also a big thing. I wanted to mention that, you know, an orchestrator knows the dependencies between each of those. Does this script to run first? Does this script need to run? Now, this script needs to run. The individual scripts don't know that, but the conductor or the orchestration layer would.
So this next quote from the survey is so important that I'm just reading it and we'll dive in from there. And the quote goes like this. Tech pros are collecting these business metrics, but there is a need to bridge the gap between business metrics collected and tech pros' confidence in their ability to communicate performance to the business. And what this says to me is that they actually have the tea leaves in their cup, but they can't read them, or that they see the metrics and they can explain them to other technical people, but they can't talk to the business. And I have spent a lot of time over the last several years talking to IT folks about their need to learn to speak business-ese as a second language, not as a first language. No one is asking you to take the hair or the hair you have left and puff it up and make it pointy like the pointy-haired boss. No one's asking you to do that. But you do need to learn to speak business as a second language and be able to translate that, or else you're not going to be successful. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that as well.
Yep. You know, as I'm sure you have, I've come across this a lot in my career. And, you know, traditionally, you know, us geeks, we don't speak business. We speak, you know, PowerShell or we speak of you know, whatever.
Pearl. We speak Pearl. No, yeah, no one speaks Pearl anymore. I'm like the only one left. It's yeah. But anyway, keep going. Yes.
Maybe a little bit, maybe a small portion Pearl. No. But yeah, they don't really speak business because they don't really know. They can't. They're so focused on, you know, their job and exactly what they're doing. You know, their boss may come to them with a request saying, OK, we need to, you know, deploy this many, you know, a bunch of these laptops, for example. You know, in this day and age, I need to deploy a lot of laptops because people are going to be working from home. Well, the IT person may immediately think, oh, crap, I got to do all of this work and now I have to deploy these laptops. But they don't really understand the reasoning, the why behind that. And I think a lot of IT professionals need to maybe ask the manager, well, you know, can I get an idea of you know, why or didn't, what is the bigger picture? Because a lot of us think like, well, we're just going to focus on exactly what we're doing now. And I don't want to take the time to do all this, you know, deploy all these laptops to, you know, to not have to deal with users and all of this sort of stuff. But if they would understand the why, then that would, at least for me, I come back to, if I understand the why of this, I feel a lot better about it. I feel like, you know, you have a sense of purpose. If you're taking this back to, you know, the business value, this goes back to also a big thing of DevOps is, you know, about business value. Well, that server that you're spinning up or that that laptop that you're deploying to a user. Well, if you do that, then the business will, you know, make more money, which then will continue to give you a job, which then will make, you know, will maybe give you a bonus or it will relate to you. You'll feel like, you know, you're contributing to something greater than just building a laptop. And I think, you know, the whole DevOps thing kind of brings in that soft, cushy stuff of let's work more as a team and really understand not only what you're doing, but why you're doing it at the end of the day.
Yeah, I had an experience early on in my career that not a lot of people have. It wasn't unique. It was just a conversation that doesn't occur a lot. I was working for a manufacturing company that made circuit boards. And it was toward the end of my shift, and one of the Zebra printers in the factory area was down. And Zebra, because they print barcodes, that's why they're called Zebra printers. And it was down. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I had 15 minutes left on my shift. I took a look at it. It's like, I'm going to need to come back tomorrow and work on this one, right? And the person who was in charge, the manager of the line, said, not a problem. If you've got to go home, pick up your kids, I totally get it. But let me just explain to you that these boards can't ship until that Zebra printer comes back online. And every one of these boards represents $12,000 worth of profit to us. And I turned around and I'm looking at seven racks that each had 120 boards in them. And he said, yeah, we can't box these and ship these until that printer's back online. So do what you need to do, but just know that each one of those boards is $12,000 worth of profit. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'll make a phone call, be right back. And, you know, I didn't get yelled at. Nobody called me in their office. Do you realize what you caused us? None of that. This person very calmly said, look, we all have a life and we get it. But you need to understand the financial decision you are making, even though you think all you're doing is working on a printer.
Yep.
And I think that DevOps, because of its focus on, again, the user experience side of things, and the metrics that aren't just hardware metrics, the metrics of how many transactions, how many customers, how many upsells, how many cross sells, how, you know, all those sort of intangibles, because DevOps focuses on being able to capture and relate those, that the DevOps community, the DevOps culture has instilled in IT folks a better understanding. But that understanding is there. I think the message I'd like for people who are listening to know is that no matter what level of IT you're working at, your decisions are financial decisions. Your decisions have an impact on the company, and you just may not know it. Sometimes that's because it's not communicated, but a lot of times it's because you haven't taken the time to figure it out or find out. Mm-hmm. But the information's there. It just may be in a language you're not comfortable with speaking. Yep. So anyway, I just wanted to share that experience with you and with everyone. You had mentioned that if you do have a group of people who are either not interested or not so good at learning to speak business ease, that there is a way around it, that a team lead is another option. So can you explain that?
Yeah. So, as we were talking, I was mentioning, a lot of us IT people, we don't really, really speak business ease by default. It's definitely not our default. And one thing that I've seen some success on in some previous positions was the concept of a team lead. A team lead, they're not necessarily your manager. You don't report to them. They are essentially the liaison, I guess, between, the hardcore geeks that are just getting the job done. And it's really, that's just what they enjoy. They don't enjoy the business aspect at all, versus the team lead in some of these organizations where they like the kind of management aspect to some degree. They like leading. They're usually more senior, and at that point, they understand they can be that liaison or that conversion between I need to roll out this application because it's going to make us X number of dollars, to convert that to, okay, now team, we have to roll out X number of servers and deploy this, mm-hmm. and configure this. So they're kind of the liaison, and they're not necessarily a manager, because at some degree you have to kind of have that leader aspect. You have the manager, the traditional support, the traditional hierarchy that organizations follow, but more of a team lead that's more that can more senior, likes that management kind of a leadership style. I think it is a really good way to go about that as well.
Hey, look, in IT, we know all about data transforms. We know about converting from this database platform to that database platform. And what you're talking about is just another data transform.
Yeah, too bad we don't have one of those language converter kits on our, the necklaces that some of the doctors have. The CIO can come to you and speak into it, and out will come, geek.
Right, exactly. Hey, look, if anybody needs a startup idea, there's one for you, is to translate. I know that online language classes have Klingon and Valerian. So they probably will have a geek curriculum coming out soon. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been an amazing series of conversations. One more time, if people wanted to find out more about you, where can they find you and your stuff?
Sure. They can find me at adamtheautomator.com, or you can hit me up on the Twitters at adbertram.
Fantastic. And if you're looking for the data, more of the deep dive into the Cloud Confessions report, you can find that at solarwinds.com/cloudconfessions. Adam, thank you again.
Yep, thank you.